With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We tell the story of family businesses all across the St. Louis region. This is The Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting and Dan Bean from CMA Consulting joining us here. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and a very special guest we have this week from Butler's Pantry, Rick Nix Jr., who took the company over from his father, Richard. And they are huge, providing catering service to homes and businesses. They employ about 400 people around the St. Louis region. We're happy to have Rick from Butler's Pantry joining us here this weekend on The Business of Family Business. So let's start when Butler's Pantry was founded. What did it look like and what year are we talking about, Rick?
Well, Ryan, Butler's Pantry was founded in 1966 and was really the dream of my parents, Richard and Anita. They had been involved, or my father had been involved, in the food service business with a company known as Pope's Cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And I think my dad has always been a serial entrepreneur. And so he and my mother started the business known as Butler's Pantry.
It's a food pun, but not really.
Right, exactly. No. Food is definitely in our family. And I will say that when they started Butler's Pantry, I think they originally thought the business would be kind of an upscale, almost an Epicurean type shop where people could go in and buy things for dinner that evening or possibly even for small home parties.
Yeah.
But that quickly changed after they opened Butler's Pantry and they realized that it was really full service catering at that particular time that most people wanted.
And this is in the 60s. What's a typical catering meal look like in the 60s?
So that's another great question, because our business and our the catering industry in general has just grown exponentially since the 60s. But in the 60s, when they started, I would say that catering was made up of weddings, which might be in the church hall or possibly in the basement of the synagogue, which usually meant that people would get married, exchange vows, and then come for something simple like punch, maybe wine, cookies, maybe finger sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so over the last 50 years, obviously, weddings have grown a lot. And then I would say that nonprofit business was virtually inexistent in the late 60s. There were obviously plenty of nonprofits, but they didn't really entertain like they do today with all the fabulous galas that we're all invited to and all the ways that we can have fun with nonprofits. So the nonprofits were certainly a growth over the last 20 years or so for our business. And again, reaching back to the 60s, corporations didn't entertain nearly as much as they do today. I think mm-hmm. today's corporations look at catering and experiences with food and with alcohol and with other libations mm-hmm. As part of their marketing budget. I mean, they have to stay in front of their employees. They have to stay in front of their clients. They have to keep people happy, and mm-hmm. they do that through entertaining. Back in the 60s, our business was probably made up of an occasional open house. A bank might open a new branch, and they might have a vegetable platter and mm-hmm. a cheese platter. And as you know, and again, catering has really grown into quite a dynamic industry.
You know, I know what the refrigerators looked like in the 60s. We had one, and it had the big handle on the front. refrigeration and storage has changed a lot. That probably really helped the way the business and how catering grew over the years, too.
I would say equipment in general for catering has come a long way. Mm-hmm. We look at different ways to display food today, different ways to handle food. I can tell you that refrigerated trucks in the 60s and early 70s were really something that people only dreamed about, mm-hmm. whereas today we have a fleet of six or seven refrigerated vehicles that take care of our products as they're in transit.
Yeah. So Butler's Pantry today, what does your business mostly look like? Who are you servicing, and what are you doing today?
Our business, again, has grown. We have a great mix of business. I think, as I mentioned a little earlier, we have a great cadre of nonprofit corporations or nonprofit entities that we take care of, and that could be just from a board lunch all the way to a gala for several hundred people. Corporations today here in St. Louis are continuing to entertain, whether that's at their offices, at the home of one of their board members or one of their chief executives. Again, there are so many different venues in St. Louis that give us the opportunity to cater in local landmarks, local buildings, parks, all kinds of places from the riverfront to West County that allow us to for corporations, nonprofits, and individuals to entertain. I will say that, again, the wedding market has, you know, exploded over the last several years. Today's bride and groom have probably waited a little bit longer in life to get married. And so it's really a celebration of the two of them, whereas probably 20 or 30 years ago it was more of a celebration of their parents and their children getting married. Again, not that we don't have those traditional classic weddings, but today's bride and groom do look a little bit different than the brides and grooms and the weddings of the past.
Do you pretty much do everything except the cake?
We do. We have a lot of great vendors that we work with. Of course, people that make cakes, and we also have many wedding planners that we work with that help to coordinate things past just the reception. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they coordinate at the church or synagogue, and they coordinate possibly the rehearsal dinner the night before, florals, entertainment. So not only does Butler's Pantry handle that, but we work with a lot of great vendors.
Yeah. What's the most challenging menu items that people have requested?
Menus have changed quite a bit over the last 30 and 40 years. While beef is still a staple of most menus, whether it's a buffet or sit down, things like family style dinner service can be a challenge because it requires a little bit more labor and certainly a little bit more food, and there's just a few more steps involved in putting out a platter of pasta or possibly a platter of chicken, and you know, people offering it around the table. That certainly has been a very popular, but can at times be a little bit more challenging than your traditional buffet dinner or your sit-down dinner.
When we come back, I want to learn more about what happens behind the scenes at Butler's Pantry and maybe if they have room for a taste tester like myself in the future. We'll continue our conversation with them along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Welcome back to the show that tells the story of family businesses across the St. Louis region. It's The Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting, and Dan Bean joins us in studio along with Rick Nix Jr. At Butler's Pantry, I hear about how some of these different companies that are in food prep, they have to have a taste tester. Is there an official taste tester? Someone that when you're coming up with new ideas of things you can offer on the menu, that they get the first bite and they give the thumbs up or thumbs down?
You know, that's a great question. And over the years, especially with our nonprofit clients and our wedding, those are very important events. And when you're talking about a wedding day, it's a once in a lifetime. Hopefully, in many cases, it's once in a lifetime. So you want to get it right. Mm-hmm. And so at Butler's Pantry, we make an extra special effort to, you know, bring in the bride and the groom and make sure that what we're serving them on that tasting day is what they're going to get on their wedding. When it comes to nonprofits and corporations, we can get a little bit more creative. Mm-hmm. And so many times when we're doing those events, those are recipes that we are perfecting for sometimes the first time. And so it's really nice to get your nonprofit and your corporate people in your tasting room mm-hmm. and be upfront with them and say, hey, we want honest feedback because we are, in many cases, doing these recipes for the first time, and we want to make sure that it's perfect for the night or day of your party.
Right.
And so at Butler's Pantry, you're not going to find a chef coming out with a a mallet in his hand if you say something's too salty or you say something might be too spicy.
Right.
We pride ourselves on, delivering what our clients want.
Yeah, there's a lot of different flavors from around the world. There's a lot of immigrants that come to St. Louis, so I'm sure they find, I want it to taste the way I remember it when I was here. And then sometimes it's hard for you to figure that out unless you were actually knew someone that was living there at the time.
We've had mothers of brides, mothers of grooms that have actually come into our kitchen and said, this is how my recipe is, or this is how my grandmother's recipe is. And, you know, again, we try to accommodate those requests because we find it challenging yet creative.
Well, you're a large organization now. Butler's Pantry, is it 400 employees, almost 400?
Almost 400 part-time employees.
Wow.
And 70-plus full-time employees. And
so what does a typical week look like for you? How much food are you actually prepping, and how many different people are you helping in the area?
Well, that's what makes catering so much fun, is that really you're never doing the same thing twice, and you could be doing a large dinner party for 500 people, or we could be doing 15 home parties that require 15 different menus. Hmm. And so I think part of the challenge, but again, part of the fun, is that you're always tweaking your recipes, you're always tweaking your guidelines for how you're going to do things, because you want things to be as fresh as possible, and you want them to be as memorable as possible. So I think that's what's so great about today's buyer or today's patron, is they have a pretty good knowledge of food, or they see things on TV that they want, and they want to challenge us because they want to provide an incredible experience for their guests.
Yeah. Well, your dad founded the company. How do you differ from your dad in his approach and how he handled catering compared to how you handle it today?
I would say that when he first started the business, small business, especially catering, was a very tough business. There was not the necessity or the need at that particular time to entertain nearly as much as today's consumer environment provides for us.
I remember my parents and my in-laws, they said everyone brought a dish. That's the way weddings used to be.
Many times the neighborhoods would come together and you know, one mom might have 20 dishes, and another person might have 20 dishes, and they bring it all together so that, you can have enough china to entertain 100 people at your home.
Right. That was how catering was for them. They really asked their friends and family, if you're coming, can you bring something?
People would freeze casseroles, and, that just kind of all came together on either the wedding day or the party day. And so, I feel blessed that our economy has changed. I think the outlook on the hospitality careers has changed tremendously. I joked with Dan from time to time, and I joke with people at work all the time. If you were to tell your parents 20 years ago or 25 years ago that you were getting in the food service business, whether that's a restaurant job or a catering job, they probably would have thought of you as a failure, because our industry was not necessarily known for high pay. It was probably known more for long hours, low pay, and not very good fringe benefits.
Yeah.
And today I can tell you that's what I'm most proud of, is our industry, again, whether it's restaurants or catering, has really done a great job in developing living wages, careers, and creative opportunities for people to express a lot of creativity.
How big is your facility, and where are you located? Where are you putting all of this together?
So we moved about 10 years ago from the smaller commissary and headquarters on the hill to Lafayette Square. Mm-hmm. We were able to develop some property behind the old city hospital, and we're currently now in a 20,000 square foot office warehouse commissary, which has allowed us to grow our business, provide a great environment for those that work in our as part of our team. And again, we feel like we're part of a thriving neighborhood in the city of St. Louis. Lafayette Square has so much history. We're kind of at the crossroads of Highway 55, Highway 44, 64, 70, and we can practically be anywhere in St. Louis in a matter of 15 minutes.
Wow. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I wanted to talk to you about their approach in finding the right location. You know, they found an area that was centrally located. They can get around pretty easy. They found something that had enough space for them as they continued to grow. How important is it to find the right location for your business?
So they did a very good job of finding a place that gave them easy access to most any direction they needed to go. I think what's most amazing is they committed to an area where businesses like them calling that home was probably not a common thing back then. And so they committed to being a positive force in a neighborhood where that was very beneficial and very helpful for that neighborhood at that time. And it would be nice if more businesses in St. Louis who had that flexibility would make a commitment to their local community the way Rick and his business have.
Was your mom involved too?
She was in the very early days. My mother, Anita, came from a family of Italians, and they were instrumental in some of the early dried pasta businesses here. My mom's family actually made pasta here in St. Louis around the turn of the century, and the business was thriving until the 60s. And their original equipment was bought in 1904 from the Italians had brought over some, at that time, was state-of-the-art pasta-making equipment that we hadn't seen in the United States. And so several of my uncles got together, they bought it, and they started a business at that time. So,
do you do festivals?
We do. We've been very involved with the Great Forest Park Balloon Race for the past 30 years.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, that's one of you know, one of those landmark events here in St. Louis that's been around for almost 50 years and is nationally known as one of the largest balloon festivals in the country. And so we do try to wrap our hands around and have been lucky to cater some of the local golf tournaments on not the most recent golf tournament, of course, at Belle Reve, but our company has been involved with some larger events that have been brought to St. Louis.
There seems to be two different approaches here with your dad. Did he make things easy on you, or did he give you a hard time, you and your other brothers and sisters?
I think it went both ways. I would say that there were times when, you know, he would lay the hammer down and, you know, you have to be the example. And there were probably times that he would tell you that he probably let us slide with certain things.
Yeah.
So
I hear them both ways,
for sure.
The way it goes. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, we talk about this on the show sometimes, the way when you have the kids grow up in the business and they're doing things like washing dishes, they have some parents treat it like they have to be the example. They go extra hard on the kids, and sometimes the parents give them a little bit of special treatment. Sometimes they give them, you know, the family discount where they, you know, there's different ways that different parents handle the kids in the business.
It always seems like it evens out in the long run, but at different times the parents think they're doing too much for their kids, and at other times the kids think the parents are taking advantage of them. And so that seesaw goes back and forth and swings this way and that way. But in the end, I think it probably tends to balance out pretty well. And most kids don't get damaged. They get some good memories and they get some great stories. And parents the same way.
So what did Butler's Pantry look like back in the early 90s when Rick Nix Jr. took over the business from his father? We'll ask him that, and we'll continue our conversation on the business of family business presented by CMA Consulting next on KMOX. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, joined in studio with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. And we're always looking for new family businesses to profile. Reach out to Dan Bean at CMA Consulting. Let them know about a family business that maybe is near and dear to you, or maybe one you work with, or maybe one you're a part of. CMAconsult.com. Just send Dan Bean an email at CMAconsult.com and let him know you're interested. We continue our conversation now with Rick Nix Jr., from Butler's Pantry. Do you have any other brothers or sisters that are currently in Butler's Pantry?
No. Actually, I think, as I mentioned, one or the other has probably done their time at Butler's Pantry. But essentially from 1992, when I took over the business from my father, they have all had great careers and in obvious and in food-related industries. My sister, Anne Marie, runs the Art of Entertaining in Webster Groves, and she has grown that business over the last, I think, almost 25 years into a little powerhouse. And so there's no competition between the two of us. I want her to know that one, that I'm talking on the air. But in fact, her business complements our business beautifully. And many times she sends clients to us that are just too big for her to handle, and vice versa. So my sister Nicole works for U.S. Food Service, and she is a large she's a salesperson that handles some of their largest accounts on the West Coast. And then my brother Paul owns a meeting planning firm down in San Antonio. Wow. So we all are kind of in the business. And of course, as I mentioned to Dan, my stepsisters actually bought another business that my father had started in the late 80s. So my stepbrothers and sisters are involved in the business in some way, hospitality industry.
Yeah, so there's a connection there.
Correct.
Well, you decided you wanted to be a part of this. You got to the point where you were at Butler's Pantry and you're looking at taking further roles, but your brothers and sisters broke off. And do you know, have you ever had a conversation why they decided to do that as opposed to stay inside of Butler's Pantry?
I think they were all better educated than I was, and they had a lot more opportunities. And seriously, I think they've all had the opportunity to do really what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so, we're lucky that in a family of four and an extended family of seven, we've all been able to get along, and we've all found kind of our little niche.
And you can work well with each other, even though you're in the same sort of industry, but you're able to work in harmony.
For sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That's great. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. Is that typical? Do you see a lot of times where multiple siblings maybe grow up inside the business, but then they all go off and do their own thing?
I would say it happens less frequently. Mm-hmm. Typically, if the members of a next generation in a family business are going to work in the same industry, I think they would generally work in that family business together. Mm-hmm. The way Rick's family has done this, they are all in a different business, but still in the same industry. And I think that's a path a little less traveled, but it's admirable that they all found their way. Mm-hmm. They're all running things. They're all in significant leadership positions, and they still get along well.
Rick, let's go back to 1992. How did the ownership move from your dad to you?
That's a great, great question, because I'm sure it's something that every family business goes through at one time or another, where you have the matriarch of the family or the leader of the family, the leader of the company, who's starting to age. Although at that particular time, I think my dad was still very vibrant and part of the business. But, mm-hmm. He's looking down the road at making sure he has enough money in his little nest egg for retirement. Mm-hmm. Where I'm kind of new and, want to make some improvements and want to invest in new equipment and new ideas. And so there's a natural clash, so to say, that mm-hmm. you've got one partner who wants to grow the business and wants to be creative, and the other one who is, kind of trying to save for retirement. Mm-hmm. We were lucky to be able to come up with a solution where we were able to buy them out.
Mm-hmm.
And
you say we?
Yeah, well, my wife and I.
Okay.
Yeah. So my wife, Elizabeth, is very, important to the business. And for the last, since we've been married, the last 28 years, she, provides feedback and certainly instruction on. I remember that one of the hardest things was my dad owned the building that the business was being operated out of. And for a long period of time, or for several years, I really wanted to build a new building or move, and back in 92, it was really difficult to find an affordable spot, because obviously when you move walk-in refrigerators and exhaust hoods and all of your equipment, it can get pretty expensive. And in 92, even though we had been around for a while, our business was still very small, so it wasn't as if we had access to a lot of capital or access to lines of credit that we could just pick up and move. So I remember one of the most difficult parts was how we were going to pay him rent and how we were going to coexist, because he had another business at the time working out of that space. And then again, coming to that number of what he thinks the business is worth and what you think the business is worth.
I see.
I think no matter how you slice it, there's going to be, I think the business is worth more. I think the business is worth less. Dan can probably talk about that a little bit because he's seen a lot more of that than I have. But I can certainly say that was probably the biggest struggle, although we were able to make it happen. And so far, it's worked very well for him and it's worked well for me.
Yeah, let's ask Dan Bean from CMA Consulting about that. Is that pretty typical when it comes to negotiating? Of course, the person that founded the business, very close to it, they may believe it's worth more than it is, or the way it may be assessed, they disagree with what the current value, where some other people believe it's at.
That's endemic in family business and the sale of most any business. The seller always believes it's worth more than the buyer believes it's worth. Mm-hmm. I've only got one example on the other side of the fence, and the listeners will hear about that in the next month or two. Rick nailed this, mm-hmm. the tensions. How do you fund retirement of the current generation, and how do you have enough capital left for the next generation to run the business, invest in the business, pursue growth and new ideas, develop new products? And it is always, there's never enough capital to go around. You always have to make tough choices. The family has to have honest conversation, and they have to get creative to meet the needs of both generations. And if they sit and talk and get creative, they can generally figure that out.
Right.
But it is difficult, and hats off to Rick and Richard for being able to do that.
We'll continue one last time with Butler's Pantry. Rick Nix Jr. joining us in studio to tell his family business story. He's a member of the second generation of that company. Also, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program, The Business of Family Business. I want to thank again Rick Nix Jr. from Butler's Pantry, who joins us in studio, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I love hearing stories about great companies across the St. Louis region. If you know one that would like their story told on this program, reach out to Dan Bean at cmaconsult.com. We're here one last time with Butler's Pantry. So, Rick, when you were negotiating this, was your dad looking to do a total sale, or were you looking to still have him hold some stock, or was there any involvement after that point?
I think, when... At that particular time, he was ready to put all of his efforts into his other business, Nix & Associates, that he had started just several years prior to 92. Mm-hmm. And so he was ready to put his time. And I think, in the back of your mind, he probably was ready to put that money to work. And so he was pretty insistent on a total buyout.
Was he always fishing, like, oh, how's things going? What's going on over here? Was he always trying to find a way to be involved?
Yes. Yeah. And even today, after, he's 82 years old, he's probably going to have a fit that I said that on Camel X, the most powerful radio station in America. But he is still involved. You know, he loves to come down. We have several employees that he remembers working with when he was there. And, he loves to hear the stories about the parties we're doing or the people we've met. Mm-hmm. And so, I hope that he always feels welcome at his business.
Oh, that's great. Well, he actually started his own not-for-profit, you were telling me.
He did. After he sold Nix & Associates to my stepsisters, he retired, I think it was in 2012. I think he was still young and vibrant and wanted to do something. I think, as I mentioned, he has worked since he was 13 years old mm-hmm. and kind of a serial entrepreneur in the many things that he's done and many successes he's had. But he decided that he was going to start a nonprofit several years ago, focused on delivering books, age-appropriate books, to underexposed children in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I think he's a big believer, like many people are, that it starts with a good education, and reading is probably the most important fundamental advantage that any kid could have. And so mm-hmm. Books for Newborns was started. It's a wonderful grassroots organization that provides book bags with about 5 or 6 age-appropriate books, which encourages the new mothers and the new parents to read to their children. And again, I think that's where it all starts.
Wow. So you had a passion for that, really. You wanted to make a difference.
For sure.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Having 5 children that are all grown now, I can tell you that we have a slew of children's books. That was really my wife's passion, is ensuring that our kids read.
Yeah. It's very important.
It is.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. So you have a founder of a company. After retirement, he decides to do a not-for-profit. He has a passion project like that. I wanted to talk to you about it. Do you normally see these passion projects arise after retirement?
So it is it's generally the hardest for the founder to leave the family business mm-hmm. than it is any other generation, because they started it, it's their baby, they gave birth to it, and they nurtured it to however many years they had before they had to leave the business. So it's hardest for the founder to leave in general. For Richard to be able to leave and start another business and then to start a not-for-profit is admirable. You say he's a serial entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know he had a number of businesses before he got into food service. So he had two after he left food service. He does sound like a true serial entrepreneur. And this is a great thing, a great role model for other business founders or business executives who are having a hard time letting go, but they know they need to let go of the business. This is a great thing to do, to have an encore career, and have an encore career where you are doing a not-for-profit and helping the children in the community. You're just giving a gift that lasts a lifetime.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, some people take up golf or play poker, and he's out there trying to help kids. That's wonderful.
Very proud of him.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the more interesting catering jobs you may have had over the years, because we've had a lot of big events here in St. Louis. I'm wondering if you worked through any of those.
We have, and as I mentioned, we've been involved with several of the golf tournaments. Mm-hmm. The most recent one at Bellary was not handled by us, but of several of them prior to that were. So we have a lot of great stories of rainy events and dealing with 6 inches of rain or 4 inches of rain. We've obviously had the pleasure and were honored to serve the Pope many years ago. I think we just celebrated, was it his 20th
from
anniversary?
From 99?
Yeah, I think that was his
20th anniversary.
So we were able to do some catering and had the opportunity to meet the Pontiff. And, you know, we've catered all throughout the St. Louis area. And I think that's what our employees, our team members love so much, is they get to see the best businesses. They get to see the best buildings and landmarks and homes in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. What do you serve a Pope?
You know, that's a really good question. What I remember, he's a very light eater. I mm-hmm. think he probably was he was European in his dining habit. He would probably eat several small meals, no alcohol at all, probably other than the chalice that he takes at church. Mm-hmm. But we served him. It was hot tea, finger sandwiches. Little things that I guess just kind of nourished him through the day.
Yeah,
he probably ate several meals a day. But
yeah. I guess the answer is you serve the Pope whatever he wants.
Yeah,
something like that.
Right.
Well, you also have some dignitaries, from what I understand, the debate that was here in 1992.
Yeah, we've had a long history at Washington University of being able to take care of some of the presidential combatants. Mm-hmm. I would say that used to and still do come to St. Louis and WashU. I know one of the funniest stories we had goes back to the original debate that WashU handled. I think it was 1992 when Ross Perot was here with Bill Clinton and then George Bush Sr. Mm-hmm. And so it was a three-person debate. And we had about 6 days from the time that WashU got the nod that they were going to be hosting this event to, mm-hmm. to put together catering for really several thousand people, which included the press. And we got all the information we needed from the Bush camp, all the information we needed from the Clinton camp, but we just couldn't make contact with anyone from the Perot team.
Hmm.
So days went by, and finally we're just like, well, we'll wait and see what they want. The camp comes in a couple hours before the actual debate, and we get a note that Mr. Perot wanted a cheese sandwich. And so our chefs, being, you know, the gregarious, hospitable people that we are, we've put several different sliced cheeses on a platter, several different mustards in different bowls, and, of course, many different types of bread. And we send all this down to his campaign office, the green room, mm-hmm. prior to taking the debate. And all of it was sent back by the waiter, and the waiter was told that Mr. Perot wants a cheese sandwich. So our chef literally took two slices of Swiss and two pieces of white bread, put it together, put it on a plate, sent it down, and that was the last that we ever heard from Ross Perot. So those are great stories, and everyone on our team always says that they're going to write a chapter of a book, because I think everyone that has worked at Butler's has a special moment, and that's certainly one for me.
Wow, there's a lesson in there. I just don't know what it is, but there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He probably didn't want my bill. he was probably afraid that that cheese platter was going to be really expensive. And I joke, of course, but it was fun.
Yeah, this is St. Louis, not Washington, D.C.
Right. Right.
You're not going to charge $50 for a cheese sandwich.
No, we're not. Ryan, and one other quick story. I can remember, actually, when I was in high school, we did a 40th birthday for a rather influential citizen of St. Louis. And it was in a beautiful big home, and everyone was pulling up with these great cars. And again, I was just like a waiter at the time. And the valet that was a part of the party ended up running a brand new Maserati. And of course, as you, in the 80s, you know, nobody had cars like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so obviously the valet was not hurt, but he ended up running the car, brand new car, through a brick wall of the house.
Oh, no.
And literally the car ended up in the center of the tent that they had erected for the party. And the hostess was so gracious, obviously made sure that the valet wasn't hurt. And I guess the guy who owned the car was well insured. We are very blessed with a great team, and really our success as an organization is because of the diverse team that we have and the longevity of many of our team members. I mean, it's amazing how many different generations. We talk about ownership of companies, but we have three or four, and I think right now we have two families that have three generations working in our business. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we have a great organization backed with dedicated and committed team members.
That's great. How many employees do you have?
We have 400 part-time service mm-hmm. employees, waiters, waitresses, bartenders, mm-hmm. kitchen staff, and we have about 70 to 75 full-time employees. And so it's a great business that is growing.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I want to hear your thoughts on the story today. What do you think?
This is a story about Richard and Anita Nix, who saw an opportunity in the marketplace and had the vision and the determination to pursue that. They also had a son, Rick, at G2, who continued to build on what they established. There was a good story here about how the business moved from Richard to Rick. It's not easy, mm-hmm. and they got through that difficult process. And what I think is a role model is what Rick's father, Richard, did after he left the business. He started another business, and then he started a not-for-profit. And that's a great role model for family business leaders who need to leave the business but know they're still got gas in their tank and they want something to do. Just a great opportunity. And both Richard and Rick give back to the community and give to those in need. And it's just a great all-around success story.
Butler's Pantry. Richard Nix Jr. and your father and, of course, your mother, thank you so much for sharing your story here today on The Business of Family Business.
Thank you very much.